Hello, everybody. We have had some really dramatic moves in precious metal prices so far. I heard a quote yesterday, "What a year January has been." We've seen gold rise to record highs before falling back by almost $1,000 per ounce over the course of just a couple of days, and then bouncing back again at the beginning of this week. To hear what's happening with gold, what we think going forward, and what it means in a broader portfolio context, I'm really happy to be joined here today by Wayne Gordon, who's our commodity strategist based in Singapore, and Michael Bolliger, who's our chief investment officer for Switzerland based here in Zurich. Let's start with gold and the precious metals. And Wayne, let's start with you. And let's look back a little bit before we turn forward. So, what is it that has caused the rally over the past couple of years, and why did that rally go parabolic in the first few weeks of January?
Yeah, you're spot on, Kieran. And look, these have been historic events. So just to give people some context, gold on Friday had its worst day since 1983 when Paul Volcker announced that he was going to step on inflation in the United States. I was just a little boy then. Probably you and Michael were just a twinkle in your father's eyes. But that's the type of move that we had. And in fact, for silver, the move was unprecedented. We've not seen a shift of that nature ever before as we've collected data. So, what drove this rally initially? Because remembering, we've been long gold now for over 2 years, almost 3 years. And the first reason we became positive on gold was the COVID-19 crisis. And of course, risk rose sharply. Gold prices began to respond to that. And gold formed its part of being a hedge, as it has done traditionally. But the catalyst for gold over the last couple of years has been the war in Ukraine and the sanctioning of the Russian Central Bank. That was a watershed moment for central banks globally, who all of a sudden, all at once, decided that they needed to start to diversify their reserves away from holding purely just US dollars. The significance of that can be seen in the data that in the previous decade, central banks were buying around about 400 to 500 tons of gold a year. After Ukraine, central banks were buying around about 1,000 tons, and last year they bought just below 900 tons of gold for the full year. Of course, these risks have since evolved, and we moved through a period where gold was very resilient to the US dollar, rallying to new highs. It was also very resilient to interest rates and real interest rates starting to move higher. And in fact, the models that we had for gold over many, many years, based on its inverse relationship with real interest rates, broke down. And that's how monumental this shift in central bank demand was, that we had ETF or investors selling gold. At the same time, central banks were buying all of what was being sold and some additional gold. We've moved into the last 12 months or so, where interest rates are being cut, real interest rates have been moving lower, and the US dollar has been on a weaker footing. The traditional drivers of gold have returned along with the investors, where ETF buying of gold in the last year was at the highest level since COVID-19 in 2020. And just to give people some a compass to the strong demand from investors over the last month, around about 100 tons of gold was purchased by ETF buyers. That is large institutional purchases, being the big global asset managers, which were shifting into gold as a hedge and diversifier. Now, if we think about that 100 tons, we only bought just around about 800 tons in the full year of 2025, and we bought 100 tons just in January alone. So the magnitude is what drove gold prices to these elevated levels.
Great, thanks, Wayne. So that combination of some of the traditional drivers, retail investors and central banks all buying, kind of pushing gold up a lot. Obviously, the volatility has been pretty high in the past few days. So perhaps you could give us an outlook just in the very short term about how you think positioning might square up. But also, I think good to get your outlook from here over the next 6 to 12 months, both on gold and silver. Well, I know we're getting a lot of questions as well.
Yeah, sure, Kieran. So in part, the trigger to what has been this significant unwind was Donald Trump's announcement that Kevin Warsh was his nominee for the Federal Reserve chair. Now, the market had expected a much more dovish person, potentially given Donald Trump's previous suggestions, to be nominated for that role. Kevin Warsh has historically, I wouldn't say he has a strong, he's not sort of an orthodox, hawkish central banker. But having said that, during 2010, he advocated for a much smaller or a lack of use of the balance sheet by the Fed. He advocates more for interest rates forming a greater part of monetary policy. And again, more recently, he's advocated for a reduction of the Fed balance sheet. Now, we know that the Fed stopped QT in December last year, and the balance sheet would be held steady. So the concern in the market was that if Kevin Warsh is ratified, he makes it through the process, he could kickstart the Fed for further QT. Now, long duration assets come under pressure as a result, and gold forms part of that suite of longer duration assets. Unfortunately, this was combined with increasing leverage positions in futures markets. So the moment you get a cessation of the momentum and prices roll over, it begins to trigger algorithmic funds as well as hedge funds to start selling gold. And when you have a significant built-up position, that begins to come under pressure as margin calls are made, and the covering of long positions and profit taking continues. Now, that seemed to settle out over the last couple of days. I don't think we're past all of it yet. I don't think we can say that things are all great and things will just move immediately higher from here. But what I can say is that physical demand response over the last 24 hours, particularly from our own trading desks, has been very optimistic. So people are simply buying the dip. And it is physical demand which is really important here, because that gives us a sense of stability in the price to the point where you'll start to see speculators and fast money start to come back in. So I do think this will settle out over the next few days. Margins have been lifted at the major exchanges. That, of course, means that investors who are holding gold on a margin account have to increase the capital they're holding against that position. So that also has a moderately negative impact on the price, but that's been met by very strong physical demand, which is why prices are now rising again. When we think about gold over the next 12 months, effectively, we still see geopolitical risk as elevated. Not only that, but we expect that the sharp spike in volatility of gold above 30%, we do think that will start to fade, and we'll start to see volatility shifting back to its historical norms of around the 15 to 20% over the next few months. Effectively, with geopolitical events, the US midterms ahead, more rate cuts to come from the Fed. We actually increased the number of rate cuts that we expect from the Fed by one additional cut for this year. We think that real interest rates in the United States will go deeper towards zero, potentially even negative territory in a risk case scenario. This is very positive for gold. Withstanding that, the desire for diversification and uncorrelated assets to equities and bonds, where recently equities and bonds in periods have been positively correlated, means that gold is one of the few assets out there which actually still provides that hedging ability, i.e. its correlation to those other two assets is zero, if not negative. So we think that that level of diversification required by these asset management buyers will continue over the course of the next 6 months. So net-net, we believe gold can continue to rise. We think it will make new highs. We have an end year target of 5,900. And we would buy the dip here. Not just that, but also many of these asset managers have stated publicly that they wish to hold around 5% gold in a portfolio allocation. And we have a similar view that from an advisory standpoint, for those clients who have an affinity to gold, 5% is an appropriate position in a US dollar balance portfolio. So we expect higher prices. We see gold's ability to hedge and diversify. And so therefore, we would buy the dip.
Thank you, Wayne. Very clear. We've got one more question for you, and we've got some questions coming in about if people want the buy and hold exposure to gold, what is the best way to get that? Is it through pure gold, maybe a mix of gold and silver? Is it broader commodities, perhaps even including copper or including gold miners, for example? So how do you think about what's the right way to get that exposure?
Yeah, so there are some very more longer term ways to hold an allocation to gold. And there is some more tactical ways to hold an allocation to gold. On the tactical front, holding gold miners is a good way of getting leveraged exposure to gold. Remembering that, notwithstanding the fact that gold miners can have idiosyncratic mine-related risks, gold miners historically have been highly leveraged to the gold price and the movements in the gold price. So, and they have high volatility relative to gold. So it's not a long-term position. It's not a buy and hold position, but it is a position that people can take along some key names in gold mining to enjoy the benefits of higher gold prices. Silver as well tends to move in line with the gold price, but it is, again, as was demonstrated just the other day, it is a highly speculative, highly leveraged play on the direction of the gold price. But as we do expect gold prices to move higher, we also expect silver prices to move higher over the course of the next 12 months. Now, in that context, silver is about 50% investment demand and about 50% industrial demand. Industrial demand for silver has been very strong due to the transition and electrification of the global economy. And on the supply side, it's been broadly constrained. So silver markets are tight globally from an industrial standpoint. And we think that can also support silver at these lower levels. But that also extends to things like copper and aluminium, where the build out of data centers, the ongoing undersupply of power and power generation infrastructure means that commodities like copper, as well as aluminium, will also continue to rise throughout the year. Hence the reason in November at the year ahead event, we broadened our exposure to commodities, making the whole sector as a whole attractive with the prospect of metals performing well in the first half of the year, and then that extending to energy in the second half of the year.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Wayne. I think that was very clear on the outlook for gold and commodities more broadly. Michael, we'll shift over to you now. I know you've been speaking to a lot of clients in the past few days, and we've had questions coming in from different angles. So we've had some clients saying, "Look, I've missed the rally. Is this dip an opportunity to enter?" We've had others who have participated in the rally and are perhaps worried that after crypto became the new gold. Maybe now gold is the new crypto, and thinking about taking profit. So what have you been saying to clients who are in those different situations of perhaps, you know, not having participated and thinking about adding, and also those who've done well over the years and are getting a bit more nervous now?
Yeah, thanks, Kieran, and welcome also from my side. So look, I mean, the first thing to say is, listen to Wayne and the commodity team, because I'm again listening to him today. It's all very clear, right? If we sit down and listen to the arguments, the pros and cons, you know, in my mind, you know, it's very clear what to do with the precious metal position. And more broadly, and I think that's important, more broadly with, you know, allocation to resources, to power, electrification, digitalization. So there's a lot of interesting things happening, structural trends happening, and, you know, you want to be positioned. The other thing I tell them is, you know, over Christmas, the skiing season this year is not as great as it used to be in Switzerland. And I read again through this book from Kahneman about thinking fast and slow, and it's a lot about behavioral finance. So if we perhaps can go back to the very first chart that we showed at the beginning, you know, many people, you know, at any point on this trajectory, they sit there, they're not exposed, they look back and they say, wow, I cannot buy, I have to wait, right? I have to wait for the setback to happen. And if and when the setback happens, they still don't buy because there's a reason the setback happened. And again, you know, Wayne explained that very clearly with Warsh being appointed potentially, with other things happening, etc. So, you know, the only advice we can give them beyond listening to the UBS House View on that topic is to, you know, spend time, you know, building a plan, building an investment plan, an investment strategy, and then perhaps discussing that investment strategy with their trusted advisor. And then it's very, very crucial executing on that strategy. And that's not easy, and it's become a bit more difficult perhaps over the last 12 to 18 months because we're constantly getting hit by headlines, you know, through the news. Some are good, some are bad. There's a lot of back and forth. I mean, you said it nicely, you know, what a eventful year January has been. So there's so much noise in the system that sometimes the temptation not to execute on the plan can be higher, right? And then the second thing you got to ask yourself, what sort of, you know, structural exposure almost to gold you want to have? What role should gold play in your portfolio? And the answer to that question differs whether you sit, say, in Switzerland with the world's strongest currency, or whether you sit, say, in an emerging market where things are more volatile. But overall, once you decide, you know, you allocate, and then you can start playing the tactical ups and downs along the lines Wayne explained. You know, sometimes you want to have a bit more, sometimes you want to have a bit less. But from there, I'd say it gets a lot easier.
Great. Thanks, Michael. Perhaps going to go a little bit higher level now, because we've had some questions coming in also around currencies, and you touched on that yourself, saying there's some difference perhaps whether you're based in Switzerland or perhaps in an emerging market. Wayne talked a bit about the central bank demand, some of the question marks about the leadership at the Fed. So, you know, looking at currencies more broadly, you know, how do you think about this trend of de-dollarization? You know, what do we think is the outlook for the dollar? And what have you been saying to clients about how they should think about managing their currency exposures more broadly?
Yeah, I mean, I guess from a Swiss point of view, this has been a super important topic that kept us busy throughout 2025 and again this year. You know, Swiss franc strengthened against the United States dollar. So there is a broader topic around sort of the de-dollarization or debasement that, you know, ultimately affects portfolio returns on foreign assets. And so I'd say, you know, starting with the Swiss franc perspective, you know, the one observation is that structurally the franc has been appreciating ever, you know, for more than 100 years, right? So it's unlikely, I'd say, it's highly unlikely that the longer term multi-year trend is going to change. But at the same time, as we know, the Swiss franc is a low yielding currency. The rates are at zero. The yields on bonds are close to zero across almost the entire curve. So it's very difficult to generate income in that currency. And so historically, again, Having international exposure, specifically also in stocks and US stocks, has paid off, right? It was worth the currency depreciation on the dollar, but net, you still got better returns than having had invested that money, say, in the Swiss stock market alone, right? So this element of international diversification is really, really an important one, structurally. And then tactically, you can always argue about whether this is going to be a year, a month, a quarter where you see more Swiss franc strength or less, and the chart accordingly. You can think about hedging or not hedging, hedging more, hedging less. And so for 2026, the view is that dollar Swissie can trend sideways at around current levels. So this would be a reason perhaps not to hedge, because hedging dollar is still expensive. It's almost 4% for Swiss franc-based investors. The risks perhaps are also skewed toward further Swiss franc strength. So I think partial hedging, even in this environment, still probably makes sense. If you look at this chart here on the left-hand side, where we show the allocation to different currencies from central bank reserves, it is remarkable that the dollar part is obviously still by far the biggest, but it has been declining structurally over several years now. And if only a small part of that hits a small open economy like Switzerland, given the small size of the domestic asset pool, it can have a significant effect on the currency. And what we're seeing actually, the Swiss franc these days very much behaves like gold. It's been strengthening on an ongoing basis and along the lines of gold. And so that really makes that point that perhaps still at current levels in terms of risk management, hedging a part of your international exposure still makes sense from a currency perspective, but that doesn't mean not to invest internationally.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Michael. We've got one question on gold in a portfolio context, and people have been sort of happy to hold it as a stabilizer, as a hedge against geopolitical risks. And the question is, does this volatility mean that investors also need to look more broadly to find some new or maybe older stabilizing assets as well? So what are you advising in terms of portfolio diversification, especially given some of this volatility in precious metals and obviously the uncertainty in bond markets as well?
Yeah. I mean, I do think the point here is that, again, starting from a Swiss perspective, it's hard to generate income domestically, right? There's dividend stocks that you can use as an alternative to the bonds, which again, rates are at zero, close to zero across almost the entire curve. We've made good experiences, good results with hedge funds that can also provide perhaps not fully uncorrelated returns, but that can provide returns that are clearly less correlated to the ups and downs of the stock market. So there, you can have, say, low to mid single digit returns with an important diversification benefit. Gold, I mean, Wayne explained in detail how this helps. And so the last one perhaps also is to just have a bit of a higher allocation to equity and perhaps be still willing to tolerate somewhat higher volatility, just to make sure that, again, from a Swiss market point of view, there's a lot of exposure in great companies, but for example, finding exposure to artificial intelligence trends, to digitalization, power and resources, all these transformative trends that we're quite constructive on, it's very hard to find in the Swiss stock market. And so having this international diversification, although it comes with perhaps a bit of extra volatility, we do think it still makes a lot of sense in this current environment.
I think maybe just to quickly add there as well, Kieran, with respect to volatility, clearly the volatility we're experiencing in gold and silver is extreme, right? And this is multiple standard deviations above historical norms. And we expect that volatility will begin, at least implied volatility will start to come down over the weeks ahead. But within that context, and just talking about diversification, I focus more on the correlations currently than just focusing on the volatility itself. And on a broader sense, the infrastructure trends that Michael spoke about, Also provide opportunities within private equity and so forth, which can help people sort of diversify across asset classes that perhaps they don't have exposure to right now. The reality is, why do we have a preference on commodities? We want people to hold a portion of their portfolio in real assets. And whether those real assets come in commodities or whether they come in things like infrastructure, whether it comes in other areas of PE, I think it's important that people recognize that to drive those long-term returns over the next 10 years, having that exposure to real assets is going to be really important.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Wayne. We've got lots of questions coming in. I know we've only got 5 minutes remaining, so I'll try and just cover those relatively quickly so you can keep your answers to around 1 or 2 minutes each. I've got one on silver and copper, which I'll put to you, Wayne, one on Bitcoin, which I'll put to you, Michael, and one on sort of different ways of investing in gold, I'll put to you, Wayne. So let's start to Wayne.
Thank goodness Michael got the Bitcoin question.
Wayne, how do you see the prices of both silver and copper in the future?
Yeah, so I think in the very short term, I think silver will go back above 100 an ounce. And I think it'll follow gold higher in that regard. The issue I have is more the relative price of silver to gold from an investor's standpoint. So once you start seeing the gold-silver ratio shifting below 50, even closer towards the 40 times mark, silver is no longer cheap versus gold. And so we need to be cognizant that, as I said, silver is 50% investment, 50% or thereabouts, in industrial, and there are substitutes to silver when silver prices just move too high. So I do think that in, as I say, the short term goes higher, but people need to be cognizant of those relative relationships. On copper, we're bullish copper, and we're bullish copper and we're bullish copper miners. The reason we have that bull case is because copper is now in deficit. It will be in deficit for the next 2 to 3 years at least. And that is because demand is run rating around a bit above 3% per year, and supply has not been keeping up. It's around 1% to 2%. So realistically, as we seek to accelerate the build out of power infrastructure, there is three key commodities, copper, aluminium, and steel. Aluminium and copper are both in deficit this year, and will be in deficit in the next couple of years. And so that will support prices to a level that rations demand. And we're not at that level yet. So we have a $14,000 a ton forecast for copper, but it could easily go higher than that.
Brilliant. Thank you, Wayne. Very clear. So Michael, over to you now. And I'm going to squeeze in one more question as well to you. So first, do you see any relation between gold and Bitcoin? And second, do you think that investors should replace some or all of their bond holdings with gold?
So the second
one. I'm writing
it
down, Michael.
No. Second one is clearly no. Again, I think, you know, it depends a bit on which sort of currency, you know, is your home currency, but I'd say a small single digit is what I think is a sensible number in terms of allocation, and that still leaves plenty of space for most client profiles to invest in bonds as well. In terms of Bitcoin and gold, and there's another one on is crypto or reserve currency. So, you know, like if you look at this mathematically, there's been different narratives around Bitcoin. There's been a narrative around Bitcoin as an inflation hedge, and that during the pandemic sort of broke down. There's been a narrative around Bitcoin being digital gold. So it's just from a correlation perspective, we can show that these are not accurate statements, right? That Bitcoin behaves differently. Whether that makes Bitcoin a good or a bad investment is, of course, a different question. But I think the last sort of 6 to 12 months sort of clearly showed that, you know, gold is up sharply and Bitcoin has been moving sideways, and it's been driven by other factors. You know, there's been, you know, policy changes in the US which have been supportive. There's been talk around risks from quantum computing which have been less supporting, etc. So there's different narratives, but the one that Bitcoin is digital gold, I think clearly we have to reject.
Brilliant. Thank you, Michael. And we'll do a final question to you, Wayne. So either for people who are looking at gold for the first time or who are reviewing their holdings, could you just give us a quick sort of overview of the pros and cons of the different ways of investing in gold, so from physical to ETFs to perhaps other ways?
Yeah, sure. So most people are investing in gold through either ETFs. We see a lot of financial operators, asset managers, et cetera, who'll invest through ETFs because it is 100% backed by gold. But also within our clients, both physical as well as gold coins. In fact, for the first time in a very long time, we've had a number of requests for people to transfer some of their gold they hold in bars into gold coins. I think, look, in the end, it depends on the investor. I think it depends on the mix between tactically increasing your allocation to gold in the short term, but strategically holding a position in gold over the longer term. And so how I and many of our clients observe this is that they will have 50% of their holdings in physical, which they'll put in the vault, for example, and then 50% of their holdings in ETFs, et cetera, which can be more easily traded on a regular basis. And I think that mix is pretty good. I think if you incorporate both gold miners as well as silver into that, I don't think silver is very difficult to hold from a physical standpoint because it is very bulky relative to gold. So ETFs tend to be the more preferred option. And then for gold miners, which is very tactical like silver, simply broad ETFs when it comes to exposure to gold miners.
Brilliant. Thank you, Wayne. I think this was a fascinating conversation, to thank you both of you for joining. We hope everyone in the audience also found this informative, and us in the Chief Investment Office and your whole UBS team is here to support you and separate the signal from the noise in these very fast-changing markets. With that, we're going to close the call and wishing you all a great day.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.